As industry leaders attempt to navigate this new reality, what's certain is that uncertainty will continue to be a key feature in our lives. The problem is, our brains simply aren't designed for this level of uncertainty. But what if there was a way that you could prepare for it, harness it, and use it to your advantage? That would require a whole new way of thinking, of bypassing millions of years of human evolution. I'm Georgie Frost, and welcome to the very first episode of the So What, a brand new podcast from BCG.
We've had this COVID thing. It disrupted every industry, every life, every one of us. But there were some winners.
It's called the Uncertainty Advantage, and joining me to discuss it is Alan Eaney, Global Leader and Director of Creativity and Scenarios at BCG, and author of Thinking in New Boxes, a new paradigm for business creativity. But with all Alan's scenario planning, did he see COVID coming?
Of course not. I certainly didn't predict COVID with specificity. But what I did do, if you look at page 112 of my book that came out 8 years ago, was imagine a world where in 2020, in the spring of 2020, I don't know if I said spring or not, air travel goes down 95%. And the point is, the more we allow ourselves to say, you know, imagine in 5 years you have to pay to do a Google search. Imagine in 5 years this happens or that happens. It allows ourselves to open doors and to think a little bit more prospectively instead of only predictively about what's going to happen or what might happen. We have to allow ourselves to think about if this thing happened, if that thing happens. And if you can manage that, then the prediction itself doesn't matter. You don't have to predict the specific thing that's going to happen as long as you prepare for a broad range of things.
So my question though, look, if everything is so uncertain and you can't plan in detail, why bother planning at all? Because the example you just gave me there was air travel. Well, that's one big, but just one part of what happened as a result of coronavirus.
Yeah, and I think the point is, you started off by saying, yes, okay, we've had this COVID thing. It disrupted every industry, every life, every one of us. But there were some winners. From a corporate perspective, there were companies who were actually thriving. And I don't just mean Zoom and some of the players in online education and online medicine and online this and that. But there were others as well. Companies who were really well equipped to deal with home delivery. Companies who were really well equipped to think about what it takes to outfit a home office and stuff like this. I mean, there were winners and there were losers from a corporate perspective, putting aside the personal challenges we all faced. That's what it is to have an advantage in times of uncertainty, to be better prepared for these wild shocks that affect us all.
But were the winners as a result of being prepared? So for example, my workload increased. I'm a financial journalist. People wanted to know about their finances. They want to know about business, as you would in an uncertain time. But that doesn't necessarily mean that I'd better prepared for this situation. I was just in an industry and in an area where people wanted to know more. So is this about planning or about serendipity, maybe?
Look, there's always some element of serendipity and luck in life, in business, and in everything. No doubt about that. However, Pasteur said chance favors the prepared. This is one of those things where you can improve the odds of success by being better prepared. Let's put it another way. Uncertainty, risk. When I say these things, they have negative connotations for many people. People think about an uncertainty as a risk or a challenge or a hurdle to overcome and so on. But what if you looked at it as an opportunity to build that advantage, an opportunity to actually think, well, what if we are prepared better than the competition for the next shock that might come? And even if we don't know what it is, let's make a long list of shocks and think about how we can prepare for a range of things. Okay, we can't spend our entire day planning for the wildly improbable, but we can at least spend some time thinking about it and thus improve the odds.
Give me an example where this has really worked well.
Let's take an example from personal life, okay, just to start with it. You know, we had these massive floods in New York City, and I did not have an umbrella. Now, there's a lot of stupidity associated with that, or bad luck, or whatever you want to call it. But let's think about it. If I claim that an uncertainty advantage, as I call it, a competitive advantage in the face of uncertainty, has three components, right? And in the corporate world, I can give you other examples, but I frame it as a signal advantage, a decisive move advantage, and a resilience advantage. So a signal advantage is better forecasting. What does it take to actually say there's a 50% chance of rain? I could do that. But no, okay, maybe some people are better at it and they could say it's 80%, 90%. Actually, yesterday, the odds were 100% according to all the forecasts. So it's all on me. But in general, yes, okay, we can improve our forecasts. We can get better. We can build that signaling advantage. The second thing is a decisive move advantage. Like, do I have a pre-planned approach that I say, okay, well, whenever the forecaster says the odds are more than 70%, I bring my umbrella, it's default, it's automatic, I'm prepared, I've got the decision made in advance, or 50% or 90%, reasonable people can disagree, or I'm just never going to bring it because I can't be bothered and I hate carrying things around. I don't know. And in that case, I want to think about the third part, which is the resilience advantage. And you know what? It's only water. I get wet. I don't care that much. Maybe I don't wear my most precious clothes or care too much about my hairstyle, certainly. But it's this kind of signal advantage, decisive move and approach, and the resilience advantage as well. Those three components can help build this kind of uncertainty advantage.
Clearly, you're not British, Alan, because it's part of our uniform. We have to have an umbrella. It would be silly not to. But in terms of a bigger scale approach, where it's worked for a business to be looking at scenarios, you mentioned there about air travel, but there are other situations that I'm sure you will have gone into a company and said to them, you know, what if? And they've done that and they've been better prepared.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if you think about it now, right, imagine an auto company and you're a traditional auto company who's been making cars for 100 years, and you know how to make internal combustion engines really well, really effectively. You've done all these things. You're popular. Okay. But you see these things coming. You see all of these trends swirling around. The face of urbanization is changing. Climate change is coming. Smart cars, connected cars, electric cars, autonomous cars. All of these things are swirling around. And there's many more. I mean, we could make a list of 15, 20 trends swirling around. The human mind cannot process how all of these things are evolving in parallel. So what can we do instead? Let's think about different permutations of how those things might play out in, I don't know, say 10 years. What might the 2030 that we have to operate in feel like? Maybe there'll be one future where there's been a green breakthrough and everybody's traveling around in their pods that are owned centrally and everything's Uberized and so on. Maybe there's another future where the rich own their own things, but everybody else has to go around in the shared ones. Maybe there's a future where we regress and because of protectionism and anti-globalization, everybody lives in their own little community. I don't know what, but we can make up these scenarios and we can think, okay, first of all, make sure they're a useful set. We cross-check to make sure they cover all the relevant inputs. But if they do, then we can think, well, how would I become better prepared for this future if I knew it was coming, if I did have that crystal ball? Are there some no-regret moves that would make sense? You know, I remember working with a client a few years ago on that who literally, after exploring all the different scenarios and coming up with these moves, the CEO said, all right, who's writing the memo about how our strategy about autonomous needs to change? Who's writing the memo? You know, this was a company that had been very reactive whenever Google or somebody else announced the latest thing about autonomous cars. But they said, you know what? We have a competitive advantage because people are still buying our cars. They expect them to last 10, 15 years. And the city infrastructure is actually not going to change that quickly in terms of parking and all of this sort of stuff. So we actually have some time. Let's be thoughtful about it instead of just reacting to whatever Uber and Google announce. And let's really rethink our approach to autonomous driving. And that's a traditional Detroit-type player. It's a really exciting thing to ponder.
Okay, Alan, you like thought experiments, so let's try something.
Sure.
A speed round. You go into three different companies working in three different industries. In 1 minute each, maybe two, I want you to tell me exactly what you would say to them, what they should be looking out for, and how they can prepare. So let's go with the first one, see how this works. A cybersecurity firm.
Funny, I actually worked with a cybersecurity firm a few weeks ago and gave them a talk about creativity, about how we can challenge our assumptions. And you know, the biggest issue for them is that they focus on the tools and the techniques for how to protect things, when in reality, almost all cyber breaches are caused by human error, by people clicking on something they shouldn't. So how can they actually focus on people's minds instead of just only the state-of-the-art technology?
Well done. That was pretty much a minute. You've done this before, haven't you, Alan? An insurance company.
You know, funnily, I was working with an insurance company recently, too. They'd been doing health insurance, life insurance, car insurance for decades. But now they're thinking about cyber insurance. how can we possibly price what the next big cyber attack will be? It's not just a question of, for me, somebody attacking my savings account and getting a few $100 that the bank will reimburse. No, but what about a company? What about this pipeline that's being attacked? How can they possibly price these things? And so we laid out scenarios for what the future of cyber attacks might be like. Will the world be super globalized? Will we revert to the status quo? By preparing for all of those things, they felt themselves better able to price this new business, this new product line.
All right. I have one that you've probably not come up against. Podcast presenter from England.
Huh. A podcast presenter from England. My goodness. If I think more broadly about the media space, right, and how these things might be evolving, it's quite interesting there too. The world is changing dramatically. And to come in, maybe not, I wouldn't say the early stages of the podcasting world, but you're not that late yet. And so thinking about where one wants to play in this evolving world, thinking about how the world of podcasts, but also traditional media might evolve, is a powerful thing to think about. What are the greatest chances of success in a wide variety of environments?
What are the themes, a general theme with all of these cybersecurity firms, insurance companies, podcast presenters, media professionals, travel companies, all of these things? Is there a theme? Is there something that you go in and it's a general idea that you say to them?
The theme across all companies and podcast presenters is that they're human beings. And human beings think in a certain way. We have biases. We have so many biases that prevent us from thinking expansively about the future. We've all read about confirmation bias and status quo bias and whatever you want. There's a long list of these things. We're also overconfident when we think about the future. If you think about a British one, in 1969, Margaret Thatcher said, "I don't think a woman in my lifetime will become prime minister." And then 10 years later, she was. But it's not only her. In 2007, Steve Ballmer said on an analyst call, he was the CEO of Microsoft, there's no chance that the iPhone will get any significant market share. But it's not just him. Albert Einstein in 1932 said there's no indication that energy will ever be obtainable from the atom. In other words, there's no likelihood of nuclear power. The point I'm making is that no matter how much of a genius you are or how senior you are in an organization, you're still a human being who thinks in a certain way. And therefore, the theme is, how can we take a sort of mental inventory of some of our existing assumptions? Like, this is the way we think about our customers or our competition or podcasts or whatever the case may be. And which of those assumptions might be ready for a change? How can we challenge some of those things? How can we think creatively about what's possible? And if we're going to think creatively about what's possible, it means taking that inventory of how we think about what is and being willing to challenge some of those assumptions.
So much of what you say, and I've watched your TED talk about doubting everything, you know, seeing volatility, uncertainty as an opportunity, not just a threat, unlearning what we've learned. All of this, to my mind, requires a fundamental shift almost in the way that we view the world. And you've just said that we're humans. How do we do that? How do we shut out bias, noise? How do we stop looking to apportion blame? It's the left, it's the right, it's China, it's Putin, it's my next door neighbor's dog. How do we almost stop being human? But humanity and creativity is so fundamentally human. It's actually our greatest asset, but also our greatest weakness.
I couldn't agree with you more. I mean, if you have a 5-year-old child who gets stung by a wasp in the playground, it's very natural for her to start asking, you know, are wasps bad? Did I do something wrong? Why did this happen to me? And start hating wasps and blaming this and not wanting to go back to that playground and all the rest. And it's not so different from people in the face of COVID blaming Trump, blaming China, blaming this, blaming the right, blaming the left. It doesn't matter. To be able to overcome some of that, to be able to think, what are some of my biases? What are some of my issues? To actually try and take that mental inventory is counterintuitive, but really, really powerful, especially the hidden, implicit assumptions. The more we challenge some of these core assumptions, the better equipped we will be to build that kind of uncertainty advantage and think more expansively about what's possible in the future.
Alan, which industry do you see is ripe for disruption? Who would you like to work with? Who do you want to talk to? Who needs it, do you think?
Gosh, those are different questions. Who's ripe for disruption and who would I like to work with? I mean, just yesterday, I was working on the topic of how can we tackle anti-Semitism in society? And I've done projects on how can we improve race relations and think about Black Lives Matter in a productive way and all of these sorts of things. So all of that are things that I love and I'm excited about making a difference for. Working with the Gates Foundation over the years, working with the WEF over the years, helping them make these broad societal changes, this is also a privilege. And yet, when you ask which industries are ripe for disruption, my mind goes to financial services. My mind goes to consumer goods, really rethinking the retail experience, rethinking the banking experience, rethinking what a car will be, rethinking so much of what affects our day-to-day life. It's a really, really powerful thing.
Why? Why do you think that needs disruption? Why do you think that it hasn't? Why does it immediately come to your thoughts?
It comes to my thoughts because I've been seeing more and more clients in the last 5-6 years saying things like, oh, I'm not a bank, I'm a technology company that does banking. I'm not a store, I'm a digital company that does retail. You know, that's kind of trite, but it's also kind of true. The more companies are able to shift their perception and actually think, what does digital actually mean? How does it change my business? What are some of my assumptions that need changing? It's the same general mindset around sustainability too. You know, it used to be something that was an additional thing. And now I'm seeing more and more companies not only hesitant and not just because of COVID to fly me over for a one-day thing, because that makes no sense from a climate perspective, but also rethinking climate as a core part of their business. It's a beautiful demonstration of how changing the way we think about things can actually change the things themselves.
I know we're talking about the unpredictable, Alan, but I'm going to get you to predict for me. What is coming down the track? What are you seeing? What scenarios are you really thinking about?
Gosh, there's this sense that in the short term, the world changes much more slowly than people think, but in the long term, more rapidly, right? If you had asked me 40, 50 years ago, well, if you had asked somebody 40, 50 years ago, because I wouldn't have said much useful, but if you had asked somebody 40, 50 years ago, what would things look like in 2021? First of all, we'd all be flying around on Concords at supersonic speeds, and that disappeared. Second of all, we'd all be eating these custom formulated things that are personalized to us and take all the pleasure out of gastronomy and what have you. Third of all, we'd have massive headsets and virtual this and all of that. And okay, some of that is emerging and maybe it will, but some of those things have been emerging for a long time. And in other cases, there's these things like supersonic travel that, okay, maybe it's going to come back again, but it's certainly, frankly, air travel now is roughly the same as 40 years ago, except the A380, which is a double decker, but it's still the same. So all of these sorts of things, it's impossible to predict, but it is possible to prepare. And what I do see, you know, I personally am not sure if the technology changes will be more incremental or more disruptive. I certainly see a lot of increase in the speed of some of the geopolitical changes, which now happen by tweet rather than by formal diplomatic treaty. I certainly see things changing in terms of climate as well. I think that the sensibility there will change.
All right, Alan, just one last thing. Give us the key to cracking the uncertainty advantage.
Step one, acknowledging that uncertainty and risks are two-sided coins. They are not only negatives. They can be advantages as well. They can be beautiful opportunities for an individual and an organization to really make a difference here. There's a thought exercise I sometimes do with clients, and I ask people, why do cars have brakes? And your natural answer, like anyone, would be, well, to slow down or to stop. Okay, and this isn't wrong. But the claim I'm making is that if you are a driver who has decent medium range vision and the ability to react well, then actually the brakes enable you to go much faster. And the same is true when we think about uncertainty. If you actually are an organization or a person with decent medium range vision and the ability to adapt and react to things, then you can think about uncertainty as an opportunity to push ahead while others are flailing around, or to pause thoughtfully while others are rushing ahead willy-nilly. So looking at it in fresh ways, allowing yourself to think about multiple possible futures and how might I prepare if this thing did happen, never mind the probability of it happening, but how might I prepare for these stretched but still plausible pictures of the future? And there's massive advantages to be had in that.
Alan, thank you so much. Absolutely fascinating. And thank you for listening. We'd love to know your thoughts. To get in contact, leave us a message at thesowhat@bcg.com. And if you like this podcast, why not hit subscribe and leave a rating wherever you found us? It helps other people find us too.